Hello and welcome to a Sam Amick edition of the Warriors All 82 podcast. I am with the great Sam Amick, who decided big game in Chase Center tonight. He did not go to Kings Grizzlies, which, by the way, was actually a really good basketball game. They went overtime. But we both went to Warriors Knicks, and the Warriors were 6.5-point favorites. No OG Anunoby, which I know is a story on the Knicks side of it, but he doesn't play. Julius Randle's still out. Mitchell Robinson's still out. Warriors have a completely full roster. Nobody on their injury report. They just had the big road win in LA, which you kind of felt a slight bit of momentum coming out of that. They have a three-game homestand this week where it's Knicks, Grizzlies, Pacers. Knicks felt like probably the toughest of those three. You could maybe argue Pacers. But you kind of felt like the Warriors had to get it because of who was out and also the ability to maybe have a 3-0 homestand. And guess what? They lose. They lose again. They lose pretty easily. They went down 18-4. You could just tell right away.
Yeah, man, the Knicks are tough. And always love doing our car pods. Mr. Slater, great to be with you. I missed the Kings-Knicks game on Saturday, right? And the Knicks are only coming west to Northern California once a year, so I wanted to make sure and get a glimpse of them. They're a tough team. They defend the hell out of the ball. Jalen Brunson keeps playing with a chip on his shoulder because everybody wants to talk about how he's not a good enough alpha male. And they've got a lot of guys in that locker room who have chips on their shoulder. And honestly, it's kind of fun to see. I had a good chat post-game with former Warrior Dante DiVincenzo.
Wow.
Yes, about that mentality. And, man, he seemed like a very, very happy basketball player and somebody who is endorsing Tom Thibodeau, endorsing the Knicks ethos. And I think you see that when you lose this many guys. I told him, like, we all assume, oh, man, like, OG was such a good addition, but then he's been out for so long. And, you know, comes back briefly, he's out again. And you mentioned Mitchell and Julius as well. We were kind of giving up on the Knicks. And now I find myself wondering, like, man, can they keep this thing going to some extent before getting healthy down the line? You know, we don't know if they're going to get healthy. Specifically, Julius Randle with the shoulder. Pretty unclear what his future holds this season. But for all the criticism around Tom Thibodeau for all these years, you know, he's coaching his ass off, and the Knicks are still right there.
Played Josh Hart 48 minutes tonight.
Yes.
So a couple Tom Thibodeau tidbits in the post game. Steve Kerr credited, he thought it was, just kind of one of the deciding moves was starting Miles McBride in OG Anunoby's place. McBride scores, I believe, 29. He had 6 threes. Yeah, he got really hot early, and he guarded Steph. And then Trayce Jackson-Davis felt like he said that he thought Thibodeau's timeouts were good tonight, which, like, you know, the Warriors, so they go down 18-4. But then the rest of the game, I mean, they, like, you know, you don't want to say they controlled the rest of the game, but they were kind of the hunter the rest of the game and kept getting it to 6 to 8 to 5 to 6 again. And, you know, the Knicks kept kind of quelling momentum. But I would say the other overall part is, like, I don't know, it's just the latest night where you leave the arena from the Warriors just, like, they don't got it this year. They don't got it like that this year.
Right.
And a lot of that has happened leaving Chase Center. You know, they're actually one of the better road teams in the league, but they're 17-18 now at Chase. That's one of only four teams in the West under 500, below 500 at home. It's Warriors, Jazz, or not even the Jazz. It's Warriors, Grizzlies, Spurs. Maybe it is. I think it might also be the Jazz. Regardless, you know the company they're keeping.
Not many. Yeah.
They were 33-8 at home last year. Remember the whole story?
Oh,
was,
yeah,
like,
it was the road.
Yeah.
Well, it was absolutely.
There's no trend you can identify why or why not, but it's like, you know, they've ruined their season with continual bad home performances.
And like you said, they were fully loaded. And so if you go back even a couple of weeks, you know, maybe a little bit longer when Draymond returns from the suspension and they have this good stretch and you start really kind of believing, like, man, with the Kuminga ascension and Pajimski finding his way, and, you know, this is before Wiggins' brief personal reasons absence, you kind of started saying, like, dang, like, Warriors might actually make some noise. Like, I think we are done talking about this particular team as title contenders, obviously, but you could start to have that conversation about, you know, could they be a really tough out in the first round, and then who knows from there. And right now, you know, it's a little harder to see. It's funny because you mentioned that I didn't go to the Grizzlies-Kings game. You and I spent a lot of time at both Chase Center and Golden 1. And the Kings and Warriors this year have something in common, which is like a Jekyll and Hyde personality, and then a tendency to play down certain competition and just be confusing, you know, like really show you one night that maybe you should believe in them again. And then the next night you're just shaking your head going, man, I fell for it again.
The life of an average NBA team.
Yeah, right.
So the overall standings watch, which is, you know, Steph Curry, I thought, had, you know, kind of a good quote on it post game, where I kind of asked, like, hey, you know, like, you know, how much are you watching the standings? How, you know, how much do you feel this idea of a 6-7-8 seed fading? And also, how worried are you looking below it? What Houston's doing? You know, Houston's won 7 of 8, 5 in a row, have a really easy schedule coming up. The Rockets go. The Rockets have the Wizards, Jazz, Blazers, Bulls over the next 4. But Steph kind of made the point of, like, he said a couple weeks ago, 6 seed was the target. They were playing well. You mentioned it. But he's like, now 6, 7, 8, 9 doesn't matter if they play like they've been playing. Not going very far, which is true. But let's standings watch, because that's what we do. The loss tonight dropped them below the Lakers. Lakers blow out the Hawks. They're back in the 10 seed. Bigger picture, getting to 7-8. It's more and more out of reach. They're now 3.5 back of the Mavericks and Suns. Don't have the tiebreaker against either. Kings survive in OT over the Blazers. So I believe they're 4 back of the Kings. Don't have the tiebreaker against them. So part of me thinks some of the drama and the stakes that we feel in some of these games for the Warriors is being lessened. I'm kind of starting to believe, like, wake me up on April 16th when they're in the 9-10 play-in against the Lakers and tell me what city it's in.
Right.
Because that kind of is the remaining drama. Sure, there's an outside chance they make a run up top. Sure, there's an outside chance Houston leaps them. Houston's now only 3 back. But they have the tiebreaker over Houston. They play them a little later in the season. I don't think that's going to happen. I just think they're going to be 9-10. I think they're going to face the Lakers, which I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the stakes at that point, obviously, just a matter of, can you avoid having 2 road games, you know, if you're the 10. So try to, at minimum, get that 9 seed. But
get your leg up a little tax savings with a nice, you know, play-in gate money. You know, it'll be a good ticket too, right? Lakers.
What did our colleague and buddy Tim Kawakami report a while back on, like, playoff revenue? Do we remember the actual figure per playoff game?
Not off the top of my mind.
It's a lot of cash.
Yes, it is. You know, and I don't know how play-in, playoff.
Yeah,
you know, like a finals game is different than a first round game, just like I'm sure a playing game is different than a second round game. But a Lakers opponent would help. But now we're really just talking pennies and cents here. And we're also, like, let me tell you, one play-in game is not going to pay for the type of tax that the Warriors went into this season for what increasingly appears to be maybe a non-playoff team.
It's funny. I don't know, because we are so Warriors-Lakers-centric. The audience is there. The fan bases are there. It's an upside-down type of season from the standpoint of, like, I think, isn't Denver and Minnesota playing soon?
Yeah, that sounds right.
It's like that should be everybody's focus. That should be front and center. The spotlight should be on a game like that. And this year has this interesting dichotomy where the teams at the bottom of the playoff race are so high profile that we are guilty of focusing on them too much. Now, listen, I know I'm on the All 82 pod, so it's always going to be Warrior-centric. But it's the stakes and like the meaningfulness for the Warriors, like you just said, is feeling less by the day. Because really, at this point, you're talking about a pathway in the playoffs that is as hard as it gets. Whether it's 9, whether it's 10, you know, the league ultimately, I don't think will be thrilled about saying goodbye to Steph or LeBron, maybe even before the first round gets here.
Perhaps both, by the way. There's a chance they play this very high-profile 9-10 game, which will just, like, the building, whichever building it's in, will feel very dramatic. Even that Warriors-Lakers game the other night until the shot clock finish was, like, a really good atmosphere that felt like a big regular season game. But there's a chance, literally, there's this 9-10 game that will times that by two from the other night, and they also play again in April. And then whoever wins might just go on the road and lose. And then it's like both are out of the playoffs, which...
Well, that's kind of my point. Like, I told you last week, excuse me, that I had kind of a little bit of FOMO not joining you in L.A. for the Lakers-Warriors game. And it was all, all eyes on that game and national spotlight and everybody in the media is there. And here we are driving in the middle of the night 2 days later going, never mind. It wasn't really that big a deal. Like, this is kind of... ultimately going to wind up in the same spot. So it's just two teams that they, because of the star power and the legacy and the Hall of Famers, you keep waiting for them to give one last valiant effort, and the consistency is just not there. And then you look at this Knicks team, to swing it back to them a little bit, and listen, if you analyze the league right now, like, youth is reigning supreme. It just is, and Jalen Brunson's a great story in his post-Dallas days and the way that he's led that franchise. But they're a whole lot younger than the Warriors, deeper than the Warriors, and that showed again tonight. And again, for them, this is a nice little stretch where they are showing people that OG especially is not kind of the savior. In fact, after the game, that was kind of a lighthearted crack that one of the guys made, because I think maybe a little resentment in the media that people act like, they can't do anything without OG, and they were showing again tonight that they can.
Yeah, I think also beyond just the brands of Warriors Lakers, I think part of the reason it's such a hot topic now is because it feels like not even just the seasons, but the legacy, not the legacies of these guys, but the future of both these teams is kind of on the line. Like, where is it going? And it's being decided now. Whereas, you mentioned Denver, Minnesota, and it's like, yeah, that's a great game. Like, if that game's on tomorrow, I'm watching it. But it's like their seasons will be decided later.
Yeah.
We're going to watch Denver against Minnesota in the West Finals or second round, whatever. We're going to watch 6-7 games of that. Whereas, like, Warriors, Lakers, it's this moment, it's this stretch, it's, the play-in, and then that leads to what happens in the offseason, what happens to the future of, the Curry core with the Warriors, how does it impact LeBron? And I understand that, there is somewhat of a fatigue at times of talking about that, but that's how it is.
Not only that, I mean, Steph and LeBron are still the two biggest stars from a Q rating standpoint in the league. And it's funny, this is a dated reference, but it reminds me of, like, when I was a kid and I liked watching boxing, and it's got a boxing feel to it where it's the big names, like, oh man, like, Holyfield's going against Lennox Lewis, like, let's go. And obviously any Tyson fight that was on, there's a lot of that right now in the league, and I'm talking mainly about the old heads. And to me, having covered the league for a long time, it is like, all right, I can compartmentalize the reality of the standings, and even if the stakes are not that great, like, because I know that Steph and LeBron, or let's say the Suns are playing the Clippers, and it's like, all right, we got Durant against Harden and PG and Kawhi, and Book's younger, but Bradley Beal's, he's not in that class, but just these all-time greats who are on the back end, Durant comes to mind, certainly. You got to just watch and enjoy. That's where the Steph and LeBron thing, regardless of the stakes, has been fun. Again, not even the league for marketing reasons, but I think the fans would miss out if there was, none of those guys in the first round. I mean, I've reached the point where I just want to watch those guys play. That's all there is to it.
So Warriors starting lineup tonight was a minus 20 in 11 minutes. And this is the starting lineup that they've kind of committed to. Pajemski next to Steph, Wiggins, Kuminga as the wing combo, Draymond as the center. It came in as their best lineup, plus 70. This season. It's minus 20 tonight. It's still their best lineup. It's plus 50. But you have Pajemski went 0-2, scoreless in 25 minutes, only 2 rebounds, 2 assists. Just probably it's like really quietest night from an impact standpoint in a long time. Draymond 1-7, 4 turnovers, just kind of was in a funk most of the night. Wiggins 2-9, kind of, Gary Payton closed over him in the first half, stuff like that. So I don't know. Again, I don't. It's like tougher to have grander takeaways about what just kind of feels like, you know, a flawed team. I do think like the roster building questions are coming. The finance questions are coming for Joe Lacob, and like, do they duck the tax? You know, they're going to duck the second apron this summer. Do they still feel like they can, you know, reform this into a title team? There is some youth coming up that has been like the positive aspect of the season, right? Clay off the bench, which has actually gone well. What's his future? What beyond just like you said, you want to watch Steph Curry, but if you are resigned to the fact that the Warriors probably are not making it out of April, what interests you about them and their future?
I mean, the ability to read Joe Lacob's mind, really. Just because I think if they continue down this current track, you know, I think it's one of these storylines that is probably going to sneak up on us pretty quickly, you know, when the offseason hits. And let's go ahead and kind of game out the scenario where they fall flat in the play-in and don't even make the playoffs.
Or even, like, squeak into 1-8 in the Denver Blast.
Sure. Like, Joe, I think, has, by and large, been very patient with, you know, the kind of the respect approach and the, you know, kind of kneeling at the throne approach, and with good reason. You got four championships. But, you know, I think you mentioned the context with the tax and the second apron. And if those are the results at the end of the year, like, Joe Lacob is, I think, going to finally make some tough decisions. And I think maybe we end up seeing, you know, whether it's Clay going elsewhere, whether it's, you know, guy, obviously the Chris Paul thing is not as, no, the emotional ties are not the same with Chris and his non-guaranteed contract for next year. But really the big three, and then it becomes like, okay, can I be a fly on the wall for the conversation between Steph and Joe and Mike Dunleavy and Steve Kerr? It's funny, as an aside, tonight Bob Myers calls the game for ESPN, was in the Warriors locker room pregame.
Yeah, he said he's calling it Wednesday too.
Is he? Yeah, and so, you know, it's just those tough decisions are coming. You know, I wrote recently about Clay and the fact that, you know, it seems pretty clear that he wants to remain. And even if he is a sixth man, he seems open to that. That was not any sort of, you know, kind of disqualifier for his hopes of remaining with the Warriors and retiring with the Warriors. So I don't know what the changes are, but there's just no way they go status quo if that's what the team does.
Yeah, you know, and I do think it's more of a Clay question because, like, you know Steph's sticking around. Yeah. Steve Kerr just signs a two-year extension. Draymond's got 3 years left on a deal. Like, sure, I guess theoretically, you know, he could be maneuvered this summer, but seems unlikely considering how much money and years is left on his contract. So it's Clay's future. And then I think Andrew Wiggins, I mean, he's not a name that generates, like, nearly the headlines. There is not as much of a legacy tie to him. He's just was – huge to one of their title teams, but he's a guy I'd spotlight considering how the last couple of years have gone.
100%. I also find it hilarious as somebody who grew up in the Bay and, you know, did not witness any Warriors titles growing up, like, the idea that Wiggins's impact on the quote-unquote just one title is, like, that's a big deal, you know.
And it wasn't like, oh, he was a nice role, like, you know, side piece. He was, like, probably the second best player.
Right, so that is big. Again, not the emotional ties, but that is substantive in terms of, remind me, how far out does his deal go?
So he signed a four-year extension, and this is year one of it. So he's got three more years at, you know, right around mid-20s per year.
How old is Wiggs now?
He, I believe, is 28.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of those where, all right, what does the market look like, you know, for a guy who at his best is a two-way impact player, but is... You know, I mentioned Jekyll and Hyde earlier to describe the Warriors, and he's got plenty of that in his game. And I don't think in terms of interest and trust in the market, his, you know, just the inconsistency last couple of years, and that's even tough to say. I know he's been through some tough stuff personally, but in terms of availability mattering, you know, that's going to get factored in. So what do those conversations look like in the summer? It really, though, you know, I said, like, I would love to read Joe Lacob's mind. You know, Steph as well. It's just, Steph is such a smart guy, but he's always seemed in a lot of, environments, I guess, like a bit of a people pleaser. He's just, he likes, you know, being a unifier and you know, he's cared about the whole group staying together. And again, with good reason, they accomplished some special things together. But like, for me, the curiosity is like, where's the threshold where, you know, grown up Steph, the guy who's just an absolute grown ass successful man at this point, objectively looks at it and says, all right, I'm still playing at a really high level. And I don't see, like, if he sees the ceiling of anything remotely close to this group as, you know, lower than his liking, then what does that lead to? Like, does he say the hard thing, make the hard request? I don't know, but I am curious.
Yeah, and the calculus has changed from last offseason, because last offseason, it felt more fair for Steph to be like, you know, let's get rid of some of the young guys. Let's lean into the veteran core, you know, like Kuminga, Moody, they had traded Wiseman. Like, that part of the roster had not been pulling its weight in the previous two seasons. Even in the title season, you know, they didn't get much from the youth. So this summer, you know, they do the pool for Chris Paul swap that was clearly very, you know, it was Steph approved, you would say. And, you know, he liked the roster coming into the season. They liked the roster. But what has mostly failed this year has been the veterans, right? It was the veteran starting lineup where Klay and Wiggins go in deep slumps early in the season. Draymond gets the combo suspensions that derail a lot of it. Looney has fallen from the rotation. Meanwhile, Kuminga rises. Trayce Jackson-Davis has been great lately. 19-10 again tonight.
Yeah,
man. Pajemski's starting as a rookie. Yeah. So, you know, it's a transition phase. And, you know, whatever that means. You know, we went bigger picture than I thought we were
going to. Time for LeBron, baby.
He laughs, but, hey, you know.
I'm going to quote, you know, friend and colleague Mark Stein, who always likes to say, this league will always shock you. So, I mean, who knows? I have not sat there and tried to figure out the mechanics of it. I heard Draymond recently on his podcast, I think it was his pod, talking about how he enjoyed the process of even entertaining the idea of playing with LeBron, but he I'm paraphrasing, but he called it like extremely unlikely, and that basically it wasn't going to happen. And as if that little idea had come and gone and will always be a fun story to tell. You know, I don't know if that's the case, or who knows if it gets revisited in the summer. I mean, I've said recently on our colleague Jovan Buha's podcast about the Lakers that all the energy right now for sure feels like LeBron is maneuvering his way into another extension with the Lakers. But, you know, again, this league, who knows?
All right, Sam Amick, thank you for coming on. We'll probably talk to you later in the week. Marcus Thompson will be back on. Tim Kawakami may be back too. So talk to you then.